Okay, so this is Mitch again. We're talking now about what kinds of IRM mechanisms could we devise or suggest for the nuclear units. And in order to do that, we said, well, what are the goals? What are the overall goals for OPG, for OPG nuclear? And we just reviewed that. The mission of the nuclear operations from the Memorandum of Agreement talks about generating clean, safe, low-cost electricity through dependable performance. OPG, that talks about safety, electricity, generation, and cost. OPG has four cornerstone values of safety, reliability, human performance, value for money. So those are the kinds of overall goals that you would like an IRM to create. In addition, if you look at those criteria, the eight criteria that we just enunciated, they too look to implement in concrete terms these goals. So let's look at what kinds of initiatives OPG has taken on with respect to those goals. The Scott Madden report was a two-part report, and in the second part of the report, OPG worked with Scott Madden to develop a top-down gap-based business plan that would improve its performance. When it says top-down, it meant that the senior management looked at what the gaps are. They created teams with a leader for each of these initiatives, and they developed 30 initiatives for those four cornerstone value areas. In each of these initiatives, they identified a leader and someone to be responsible for that. So they had OPG has a business plan that would address the objectives that we just talked about and that would address the performance along the lines of the relative to the Scott Madden report. So this chart is a kind of hypothetical chart which says what was the performance like for the OPG nuclear units in the 2008 Scott Madden report. What would it be like in 2014 if the goals that were laid out in that 2010 to 2014 business plan from OPG were achieved. And what we see, of course, is there's a lot less red for Pickering. Pickering moves from red to yellow and even to white. White is green is the top quartile, the best quartile. White or blank is the second, is above the median. Yellow is below median, but in the second quartile or the third quartile, and red is in the bottom quartile. So in the value for money, Pickering remains in the red in the value for money. Darlington moves up in the overall index from the second to the first quartile, and Pickering moves up from the bottom to the second quartile in a number of the reliability indices, and actually even moves above the median or at the median. It looks like it's just at the median in the unit capability factor. So these plans are relatively ambitious already. That is, the business plan that OPG has put forward would create a significant improvement in their performance. So even though, as I said, the three-year, the value for money stays in the red, it improves significantly. So the total generating cost per megawatt hour for Pickering improved from over $90 to about $71, which is a significant decrease. So that's the start. OPG, this suggests, already has some plans or has suggested that it can produce plans that would create significant improvements along the key performance indicators of the Scott Madden plan. So thinking about developing these IRM options, we start out looking at the basic price cap formula, which is shown in the third bullet here. And if you look at that formula, the price in the next year is equal to the price in the preceding year times 1 plus an inflation index minus the productivity index plus a Z factor, which is the Z factor representing kind of exogenous events. The obvious point about this price formula is that it does not have anything in there about costs. It only talks about an inflation factor, which is intended to represent the uncontrollable increases in input costs, and a productivity factor, which is intended to represent what the company can achieve in terms of improving its operations. Nothing in here that says if I give my unionized employees a 10% raise, I get more money. If I give my unionized employees a 10% raise, they get more money. I don't necessarily get more money. It may just mean my shareholders get less money. That's the point of the incentive regulation, of course. So we came up with six options. And this is, to me, for this and for the hydroelectric, this is kind of the meat of the report. So let's take a little bit more time to talk about these and to talk about what they mean and how they might operate. So option N1 follows that formula, follows that PT plus 1 is equal to PT times 1 plus an inflation index. This is what is done regularly. This is essentially the way that the Ontario distribution utilities are now regulated and have been for some time. They're now in the third generation of regulation along these lines. And what this requires is, in order to do this, you start out with the key variables here are the original price. And as Bob talked about it, typically the original price is based on a cost of service regulation, essentially based on cost of service regulation. And the board, I think, really felt that if it were going to do incentive regulation, it had to have done cost of service for those regulated entities before it could jump into an incentive mechanism because it needed a cast-off price. So we're assuming with this that the original price comes from that cost of service regulation. That's what's in this model, in this option. But the next thing you need to do is figure out what is the total factor productivity growth, the X factor, that should be an average across the industry. That's not easy. That requires typically an econometric estimation, a statistical estimation that takes into account all of the driving, the factors that would drive costs for a nuclear utility. What drives costs for a nuclear utility? A number of factors. What's the size of your units? What's the total size of your plants? How old are your units? What's your fuel? What kind of fuel process do you have? There are nuclear experts here that can give you a much more detailed listing of that than I can. But getting those data to do an estimation of that cost is not easy. The data that are in the Scott Madden report could not have done that. The Scott Madden report only had data on what those total costs were across these plants. It had also to gather data on things like what are the wage rates? What are the operating parameters of these plants? And essentially, the econometric process says, what's my dependent variable? My dependent variable is costs. What are the independent variables? All these other factors, and I look for a statistical relationship between them. The point of that statistical relationship then is, I'm going to have something that says, here's the total cost as a function of the factors I mentioned. How many units do you have? How big they are? How old they are? And I then get an estimated relationship. And now I say, okay, OPG's nuclear plants. I know how old they are. I know how big they are. I plug those numbers into the right-hand side of that estimated relationship, and I use that functional relationship to estimate what OPG Nuclear's costs should be. If they come in above that estimated number, then they're performing more poorly than the estimation would suggest. If they come in below, they're performing better than the estimation would suggest. So that's actually the second piece of this puzzle, which is to say, do we need to have OPG's performance stretch, or can they do what the total industry is expected? The total factor productivity for the industry says how fast has efficiency improved across the industry as a whole, and that's what we can expect as an average for the future. So there are two pieces of getting X. One is, what's X for the whole industry? And the other is, where should OPG be relative to that X for the whole industry? Those are not easy tasks. I'm not an econometrician, but I studied econometrics, and I can tell you, we've done some estimation. We've done a fair amount of estimation in our time, as some of you know because you've worked with me. It's not easy. When you do that and you're going to present it to a regulatory process, you're going to do some regulatory review of that, you're going to be in a position where you're going to have an expert who did it. Everybody's going to have to hire experts to talk to them because nobody – understand some of it, but most of us here couldn't really understand what all that discussion was about. It's a difficult thing to do for this industry in particular. It's a lot easier for things like the distribution industry. There are lots of companies, there's lots of data, lots of cost estimations have already been done for those industries, and so it's a lot easier. Now, if you can't get that precise, you could still do this. You just use less precise indicators and less directly applicable numbers. You can still do it for both. You can still pick numbers. All you got to do is pick numbers for X. And you can still pick numbers for X, but you won't have as much confidence that you've got it right if you can't do those quantitative procedures. Okay, N2 says, well, if it's so hard to get these precise things, let's see if we can figure out what are reasonable goals to set. If OPG or if the company achieves those goals, what would that do to its revenue requirement? And in this case, we can look at both on the cost side and on the performance side. If you have a competitive generator and you said, I'm going to set your revenue requirement based on how much you generate, can't necessarily do that because they're subject to competitive pressures in the market. But OPG's output is essentially taken as base load. And so if they can produce more, they can expect to have higher revenue. If they can reduce costs, they can expect to have a lower revenue requirement. And so in this option, we calculate what achievement of the goals, for example, what achievement of the goals in the 2014 business plan would produce on both the revenue and the cost side, and we can come up with rates by dividing the revenue by the cost. That's the way you do it in the cost of service, but what we're doing is basing that calculation not on a sort of a business as usual projection, but on a stretch. And providing, therefore, incentives for the company because if it fails to meet those stretch goals, it will fail to meet its revenue. That's option N2. Option N3 essentially says not only are we're going to base the future on achievement of some incentive, as in N1 or N2, but we're instead of setting our cast-off price based on cost of service, we're going to set our cast-off price based on achievement of some stretches, some things that are not in the direct cost of service. The Ontario Energy Board did this in the last case by saying we're going to reduce your revenue requirement by, I think it's $55 million in the first year and $90 million in the second year based on your overstaffing. And we don't know whether you can achieve that, but the board said, we don't know whether you can achieve that, but we think that a failure to achieve that should fall to the detriment of the shareholders rather than the ratepayers. Well, those are the first three. The second three, we have specific performance targets. So that would be either one or three. What we would do is we have that standard incentive rate mechanism that follows that formula, but we are we'll say if you achieve certain specific performance levels, you can get even more money. And that would, because what we would want to say is we look at that aggregate formula of option N1 and think, maybe we really want to make sure that they focus on improving operating performance at Pickering, because that's where the real problem seems to be. So if we can devise a level of performance at Pickering that could be set as a standard, then there could be some lump sum payment that would be made, or a graduated payment depending on performance, that would be in addition to the amounts that would be accrued through the revenue requirement. Option N5, the coming major capital expenditure is the Darlington refurbishment project, the DRP. We might try to look for some way to devise an incentive mechanism for the cost of the DRP. Option N6 is an earning sharing mechanism. This, we have it here, but it could be applied to to the company as a whole, to mitigate risk for the producer and the consumer by saying if your profits fall below a certain rate, then we get an adjustment to the profits and return. We get some additional revenue for the company, and consumers pay a little more. And if our profits fall above that dead band, then we return some to the consumers. We did this assessment of options, and we put this into the table. Essentially, this is a translation into tabular form of the assessment against the criteria that is in the report. This is our judgment. We expect that everybody will have their own judgment, and since this is our part of the presentation, we're not going to go over them. We can talk about that in the discussion. Bob? Oh, conclusion. The overall performance of the fleet itself is poor. We think there should be some form of IRM, and we think that if you choose N1, you should consider adding some mechanisms to provide in performance metrics for key units such as the UCF or FLR for the Pickering units. Okay, over to Bob for the hydro.
As with the nuclear, we started with some general goals for the IRM. Obviously, we want to produce as much hydro as possible when prices are highest. The business should be operated efficiently, recognizing that when prices are highest, they move inversely to the global adjustment, so customer benefits may not benefit to the same degree. In terms of the assets themselves, we think the incentive, it would be good if the incentive mechanism provided an incentive for OPG to add capacity where it's possible. It may not be significant additions, but more capacity, if it's economic, will benefit customers. But anything that they do, anything OPG does to operate the assets should be done with an eye toward maintaining and preserving the value of the assets. We didn't really see O&M costs as a particularly significant issue with respect to the O&M assets. And as with the nuclear, again, these objectives or these goals are consistent with many of the internal OPG goals and performance measures that we came across. The current hydromass incentive mechanism, I would say it's simple but elegant in some ways, which is a significant benefit. It's not overly complicated. There are these issues where the the global adjustment and the HOP move inversely, and then there are the challenges of dealing with surplus baseload generation conditions. So the incentive may not be strong enough to encourage pumping at some times when SBG conditions exist. So there is a potential there for it might be in consumers' interest for pumping to take place, but OPG may not have an adequate incentive. And the approach that's currently taken to that issue is an after-the-fact review of OPG's performance during those conditions, how they operate the assets during those conditions. And at the end of the day, we thought that that was as a reasonable approach to take rather than coming up with some overly complex solution. We were not able to identify, certainly, yet another elegant solution to the SBG issues. And SBG is beyond OPG's control as well. The concerns that we saw with the current mechanism seem to be that perhaps because market prices are established outside of OPG's realm largely, not entirely, but certainly largely, that how much money OPG makes as a result of the incentive mechanism is really driven by the market. And that has ended up, it's a little bit like dart throwing. You're not sure where they're going to come out. They may benefit extremely well if market prices are higher than would be needed to incent them to move production from off-peak to peak, or they may not do as well. So some of that is beyond the control, but we believe there are other approaches, if that's really the issue. If the behavior is appropriate and earnings are the issue, then an earnings sharing mechanism or some other approach would be a better solution if that is really the issue. You want to target the solution to the particular problem as closely as you can. We, in the report at least, and I won't go through these because they're consistent with the high level, we came up with some more specific goals for IRM for hydroelectricity. But again, they relate primarily to how you operate the pump generating station and making sure that the assets are providing an incentive for the facilities to be available when they're needed and not be subject to forced outages. With an eye toward expanding and maintaining the value of the assets so that they benefit consumers in the long term. With that, we came up with six options, H1 through H6. We retained, you know, potentially extending or modifying the HIM. We did consider applying it to applying a mechanism to the PGS only, but we felt that since OPG operates their facilities at portfolio, the current approach is preferred. We also looked at shaping the payment. Right now, the payment is the same regardless of what time of year the production takes place. Certainly, any regulator has the ability to come up with a shaped payment. This is a fairly common practice, so it can be done. But we felt at the end of the day it was more complex than the HIM, and it was really less direct. It was a less direct way to get at the same objective. It's possible to combine either of those two with more targeted availability or E4 incentives, but you would only do that if you felt that OPG actually had the ability to take actions that would influence those, which may be possible. Customers benefit to the extent that OPG can maximize other revenues. This should be done by being mindful that taking action to just focusing maybe too much on generating other revenues could have impacts on the assets themselves. And the price cap approach, we felt that if you were going to do something on a price cap mechanism on the nuclear side, you could achieve symmetry and do something similar on the hydroelectric side. Although here the data issues of coming up with a productivity offset for hydro facilities may be even more challenging than on the nuclear side. And CapEx tends to be very lumpy on the hydro side as well, which would mean that you would need to accommodate that in the design of the mechanism. And finally, we listed for completeness purposes an O&M efficiency incentive, which is a narrow incentive focused only on the O&M costs. But again, since it's fairly capital intensive, the O&M costs aren't as significant on the hydro side. As Mitch mentioned, we scored them. We liked H1 and H3. We were a little negative toward the SHAPE payments. But again, these are only our perspective. A lot of judgment went into these assessments. So I wouldn't call them rigorous analyses by any stretch. So, but we thought that it was useful for people to see and serve as a starting point for discussion. Again, as in the our conclusions, we thought that some form of the HIM should be retained, that if OPG can influence the availability or outage rates, that target incentives could be combined with that. We did wonder, I guess is the word, if the OPG could be exempted from the payment of the wholesale market service charge if it strengthens the incentive. I assume that's a zero-sum game at some point, but it is an option that could be considered. We thought the current approach to the reviews of OPG's actions during SPG conditions was reasonable. For one thing, it forces OPG to, you know, identify and develop their process for dealing with OPG conditions. They should be documenting that if they know it's going to be reviewed, and all of that might lead to good management decisions, knowing that that they will be, their performance will be reviewed. We thought the price cap made sense, especially if something similar was done on the nuclear side, and we didn't think that the service quality issues related to safety really, rose to the issue that they merited a particular focus for the hydro facilities.
Okay, this is Mitch again. So we're kind of at the end. Just wanted to run through some general conclusions, and we have some recommendations. The general conclusions, I think we've already gone through, and given the time, you can read them on this. This is slide 33 that I'm now on, and I'm going to go right to the recommendations for the nuclear operations. Our recommendation is to implement, not to implement N3, rather, to set the cast-off prices based on the cost of service, maybe with some incentive and the unit capability factor for the Pickering units. But then to look at, to use option N2. And the reasons for doing that are really that it can be done, it's understandable, it doesn't require as much arguing of experts, but it's still going to require that everybody is, you're still going to wind up, if you're going to use option N2, you're still going to have a rather lengthy discussion at the board over exactly what the targets should be, exactly how they get measured, exactly what performance can be expected, what's reasonable. But, and if you look at one of the criteria that we applied was unintended consequences. Unintended consequences meaning, can this be gamed? The idea, one of the ideas of an incentive mechanism is that you want to set targets that in fact are a stretch for the regulated entity. If you set a target that the regulated entity can meet with its hands behind its back or has already met, you're not accomplishing very much in terms of getting the results that you want for the consumers. And so that using option N2 is going to require a fair amount of discussion of that kind, but it would mean a great deal of transparency and understanding of OPG's operations among everybody involved, and I think could be, we think, could be beneficial. We think also even with N2, or certainly if you use N1, that you might want to have some more specifically targeted incentives. Probably if you use N2, you might not need that. You need to do something for the DRP. It's coming up. It complicates the whole question of what your revenue is, what your costs are, how do you set rates during the period of the DRP, and so you need to have some possibility of doing that. And then, again, number five is a recommendation with respect to the Darlington unit. Bob, do you want to do the hydroelectric ones?
Yeah, in this case, as I just mentioned, we thought that it made sense to retain the HIM, the incentive mechanism, taking some account of the fact that the incentive payments at the end of the day should be proportionate to the benefits that customers actually receive, and the sharing mechanism is certainly one way to do that. And right now it's above a cap. The cap is reflected in the design of rates as an offset to required revenues. We thought that if there's a price cap approach for nuclear, it made sense to have a consistent approach for hydro. I don't know that we'd recommend doing a extensive productivity study if the data is not available, but perhaps a modest X factor based on judgment would be an easier and accomplish the objectives without the pain of the productivity study. And we felt that continuing the after-the-fact performance reviews of OPG's performance during SPG conditions was an appropriate an approach. In terms of the financial performance, we thought that it would make sense to have an earnings sharing mechanism applied to the totality of all incentives of all of OPG's operations. It doesn't make sense to have separate earnings sharing mechanisms, certainly, for the two businesses. Any incentive mechanism should account in some way for factors that are really extraordinary and are beyond the control of OPG management. I mean, the earnings sharing mechanism provides some protection. No one knows exactly what's going to happen in the future. So that provides some measure of protection for both consumers and OPG. But a mechanism may also require some accommodation for an extraordinary event. Or it could be an off-ramp as it applies to the whole system if, for example, financial performance was to deteriorate to a degree that it would affect OPG's access to capital markets. And the final recommendation was that we thought it is appropriate for there to be alignment between OPG's incentives and incentives that the people making the decisions have in terms of their own compensation. I know nobody wants to wake up and see, you know, an employee getting an extraordinary salary, but there are some incentives that would make sense to really drive performance throughout the organization. We can't ignore the fact that those can be effective with appropriate caution given the nature of OPG. And that really wraps it up. So I guess on Mitch's behalf, I'll thank you all for your patience. I know there was, for those of you that read the report, that might have been painful at times, but for those of you that did not have a chance to read through the report, I hope that was informative and allows you to participate in the subsequent discussions.
Okay, thank you, Mitch and Bob.